You're listening to the Racing TV podcast on the wire.
Open an account with BarwinRacing.com and receive a €30 or £30 free bet when you have a bet of €10 or £10 at evens or greater. T's and C's apply.
You're very welcome to On The Wire. This is a particularly packed episode because we're looking forward to both the Derby and the Oaks on Saturday. As we record this, the draw has just come in, and Don McLean and Brendan Duke are on hand to talk about that. We've Gavin Ryan, the young Irish jockey, stable with Dunnock O'Brien and having a fine season. He will be our Joy of Six feature this week. We're going to hear as well from Jessica Harrington and Johnny Murta, both of whom had an outstanding Leopardstown on Wednesday night. Just as we were coming on air, Don, you did mention that you were rather disappointed with the jockey bookings because Russian Emperor will not be ridden by Ryan Moore, despite the fact that Mogul is drawn in two in the Derby on Saturday.
Yeah, look, you can see why Johnny, like, Mogul has been the Ballydoyle number one Derby horse for a little while. I know Aidan O'Brien, you know, well documented, as saying that he wanted to give him a fair test because he could only give him one race before the Derby this year, the way the season has panned out, and that was in the King Edward, which he ran okay. He was probably a little bit disappointing. He was sent off an odds-on favourite. He finished fourth. He ran okay, but he's obviously going to have to build on that. But I suppose the fact that Ryan Moore has chosen to ride it now, despite the fact that he's drawn in stall two, because, you know, a load one and two in the Derby, statistically, you just don't want to be that. And you can see why, because when they come out of the stalls, the camber comes all the way downhill where the stalls are. So, and then you've got that right hand kink before you turn left and start wheeling around Tottenham Corner. So if you're in one or two or low, you have to do a lot of running to get up the hill and around the right hand bend. And statistically, it's not a positive. But obviously Ryan Moore feels that Mogul can overcome that. I thought Russian Emperor had a big chance. His run in the Hampton Court at Royal Ascot was very, very good. And his overall time and his closing sectionals compare very favourably with Lord North, who won the Prince of Wales Stakes later. And Lord North, now rated 124, he's a four-year-old, an older horse who's continually progressive. And Russian Emperor is only a three-year-old, and they were carrying similar weights, maybe a pound in it. So, and also the style of it, like the way that he finished off his race over a mile and two. On pedigree, he's not certain to get a mile and a half, but the way that he ran that day and the way that he finished off his race before that at Nace suggests that he should improve, or he could improve, for stepping up to a mile and a half, and he's by Galileo. So you wouldn't have thought that a mile and a half would be an issue for him.
We're going to talk more about the Derby later on in the show, and we're going to also discuss the interesting race of the weekend. But there's a lot of stuff for rumination, rather, before all of that. And let's go from one Derby to another. Here's what happened at the Curragh last weekend. And we'll start off with the commentary from the Irish Derby, and then a certain Magic Magical.
Racing on with two to go, and Santiago has burst through the field to lead them in the closing stages of the Derby, and is sprinting away from Tiger Mott, who's eating into the advantage on the outside, the Order of Australia, and after them is Gold May, Santiago, Tiger Mott still coming on the near side. They're inside the final half furlong. Santiago is digging to the end. Santiago, 14 Irish Derbies for Aidan O'Brien, has held Tiger Mott, Dawn Patrol from a long way back ahead of Order of Australia, and then Fiscal Rules.
But Magical is in glorious isolation, racing to the final furlong. Is way out in front of K.N. Pepper. Fleeting is running on the outside of True Self. But it's multiple Group 1 winner Magical, who's set to add another on her return to action. The Alwa's Mia Pretty Polly Stakes, a brilliant return. K.N. Pepper's second, third Fleeting, fourth True Self, Rocco Roma. Drop back to last.
Yeah, Juki, this was it was billed as a fairly run-of-the-mill Irish Derby. I don't think what happened in the race would go against that. You had a horse by Authorized winning the Derby, and with all due respect to Authorized, nobody expects Authorized to be siring Derby winners, even Group 1 winners at this stage of his career. But he has a very uncomplicated horse here in the winner, who did the job quite well, obviously, talk of him stepping up in distance. What did you make of the race?
Yeah, I think uncomplicated might be the most opposite word. It was probably his professionalism and his experience that won the day. I did see there was a little bit of criticism of Ronan Whelan's ride on Dawn Patrol, which I thought was very harsh, because he tracked the winner all the way, which was, it turns out, exactly the right place to be. The horse just didn't have the gears to go with them about 2.5 furlongs down, and ultimately the gaps had closed by the time he got there. basically Santiago got the rail, which I think was significant against Tiger Mott. Tiger Mott just hung in a little bit. It was only the third run of his life. He ran a smashing race, and Don Patrol as well, who I wasn't totally sure about it. And he still has a slightly worrying head carriage, but you'd have to say he knuckled down well after the interference. My hunch is that Tiger Moth will probably ultimately prove the best horse in the race, but Santiago was the best horse on the day.
I tend to agree with that, to be honest. Yeah, well, with him being with that pedigree and so forth and the progressive profile that he has. Obviously, Don, you know, you're wary of jumping to conclusions with everyone else. And, you know, sometimes I think in racing, if the general population kind of say something, it's true and you don't really look into it. But it probably wasn't a great derby, was it?
I don't know about that, Johnny. Like, I don't think you can evaluate a derby until afterwards. We can't say it was a good or a bad derby. Like, of the 14 horses, only one of them had run more than once this year. Mm. You know, like, really, there was scant evidence, which is why it was such a big field relative to previous Irish derbies.
And to back up what you're saying there, Fiscal Rules obviously had run very well in the Guineas on only his second start, and he ran well again, and he was only fifth, you know, which shows that there was a bit of depth to him, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Crossfire Hurricane, a Gallinule winner, like, maybe he didn't stay. But I just don't think we had the evidence, which is why it was worthwhile having a go at some of the outsiders, and ergo the 2-1 favourite goes and wins it. Mm. You know, and that's why there were just so many unknowns going into the race. And we're obviously wiser now than we were, but we're not completely, we don't know everything yet. So I think as the season goes on, that'll tell us how good a race the Irish Derby was. And it frequently happens more with the Epsom Derby than the Irish Derby, because it comes up so early in the season usually that we look back and we go, geez, that was a good Derby after all. At the time, we didn't think it was. But no, I agree with Brendan a bit. I thought Tiger Moth was very good, and he showed pace. And he had done the same thing at Leopardstown the time before. He showed a lot of pace to win that maiden, which obviously it's looking like a stronger and stronger maiden all the time. And you know, his dam and lesson in humility is essentially a sprinter, finished third in a Diamond Jubilee. So yeah, and he's by Galileo. So and he saw it a mile and a half well. So he's got plenty of pace in his pedigree as well. And like, I suppose, like the winner, he's a very lightly raced horse. So you'd expect that he'll go on from this. So yeah, like of all of them, of all the horses in the race, he's the one that I'm looking forward to seeing out next most.
We'll hear a little bit from Jessica Harrington shortly about Kay and Pepper, who made a bright return to action when she was second to Magical in the Pretty Polly. And, you know, when you look at it, Dukie Fleeting rated 114, True Self rated 110, Kay and Pepper rated 110, and Magical on her reappearance absolutely laughs at them. It kind of goes to show how good she is, and I suppose how good Enable was as well, because she generally couldn't beat her. But I suppose as well, just the joy of having a mare like this in training at five.
Ah, it's marvellous. I didn't expect to see her around. I mean, it's only one fold, so it makes sense that they should try and have some fun for her. And she's going to be a factor in all the major middle distance races again this year. She's just such a smashing mare. I mean, they've looked at the race beforehand. She doesn't normally make the running, but they've looked at the race before and gone, there's no pace. Oh, that's fine. We'll just jump Magical out in front. Not to keep beating this drum, but in a similar situation, they've looked at Sir Dragonet's race. Oh, there's no pace on here, but we can't go and make the running with Sir Dragonet because he's not that straightforward. So it's just great to have those kind of options with her. And she's a smashing filly.
Yeah, we might as well talk about him. I tipped him up, obviously, to win his race on the Saturday. Turned into a 3-runner race from a 5-runner renewal of the Ledge Stakes. Fascinating race tactically. In some respects, it wasn't all that surprising what happened. Don, where do you stand on this? Dukie and I have probably gone different courses. I think Sir Dragonet, he just doesn't, he's totally ill-suited to a small field. He can't quicken. He needs a strong field, maybe stepping up and trip, possibly ridden more straightforward in a sense, but is he just a rogue, Don?
I don't think he's a rogue at all, Johnny. No, I think exactly that. He's a good horse. He ran well in the Derby. He ran well in the Ledger when he probably didn't fully see out a mile and 6.5 furlongs. But yeah, like the race wouldn't have been set up to favour him at all the other day, the Ledge Stakes. But like Wayne Lauren just got out in front on Buckhurst. He's very straightforward. He loves a mile and two at the current. That's his bag. And actually, like Buckhurst, we spoke about Buckhurst before, but I think he's a very interesting horse in general. Like his run in the mile race the previous day, that was a big run. He was given £5 away to Ancient Spirit, and over a mile, which is probably a distance short of his best, and he had the bob of the head gone the other way, he'd have beaten him. And I think he's a very straightforward horse. He looks like he's continuing to progress, and he completely had the run of the race the last day. Our Wayne Lorden engineered the run of the race for himself out in front, and he's just a pacey horse. And Sir Dragon, and you know, Sir Dragon hasn't won since he won the Chester Vase, so, and he's got twos and fours in front of him, threes probably. So then you kind of think maybe there's a reason for that, but I think a mile and a half strongly run race, and you know, maybe it's not ideal that a horse needs conditions to be perfect for him to run his race. But I think given his conditions, a mile and a half and a strong pace and maybe good or easier ground, then he still, I wouldn't completely lose faith in him. But I just thought the other day, easy in hindsight, but yeah, it especially with the defections from the race, it really wasn't going to suit him.
A couple of trainers recorded doubles at Leopardstown on Wednesday. John Murta winning the Durnstown Stud Filly Stakes with no at all. Obviously, Sinowan then was a winner for Mick Alford in the Amateur Stakes. But Jessica Harrington was certainly a trainer in form as well. And it is from Harrington and Johnny Murta that we hear now both were speaking to Gary O'Brien.
What's it been like for you kind of overseeing events, essentially or largely speaking from home, while your horses have been carrying all before them, it seems?
This has been grand. I got used to it. A bit frustrating at times, but Kate's done a terrific job, and Richie and Bubba and Matt, they've all done, you know, the staff have been absolutely fantastic. And they've pulled their weight, and I've been sitting at home just giving out to them.
And what has the highlight been? I guess Alpine Star at Ascot must be right up at the top.
Oh, yeah, she was fantastic because, you know, she hadn't run for nearly 10 months. And, you know, to go out and win a Group 1 off that long break was fantastic for her. In, you know, she and to for the two half-sisters to win the same race at Ascot.
And you've settled on the Prix de Diane as her next target. When does she travel out there?
She goes out, she's going out tomorrow lunchtime.
Mm. And she took the trip to Ascot perfectly well. No worries on that score, is there?
No worries on that score. She's a very laid-back filly. And so let's hope she goes out there and does the business there. I think it's a very good race.
Mm. And you've gone for the intermediate trip. Do you think, could you see her going a mile and a half a bit later on?
I think so, definitely. But, you know, having gone a mile and won a Group 1 at a mile, we just thought that we'd be better off to just go up in stages.
Mm. And I must say, I loved the run of K.M. Pepper the other day at the Curragh to finish second to Magical. I wasn't alone. I guess you were thrilled by what you saw too, were you?
Absolutely delighted with her. You know, she's just had a slow spring, took a long time to come to hand. And we really thought that, you know, we needed to get her run into her before the Oaks. And so we plumped for a Group 1 with her, and she ran beyond our expectations.
Well, we got Johnny Murta with us after Know-It-All's win in the Group 3 Durnstown Stud Filly Stakes. Johnny, you didn't want to come on beforehand. You're getting a bit superstitious in your old age. You said you'd leave it till afterwards. At least you were right about that part.
Listen, I wasn't going to push me luck, but it was a great win. She's a really nice filly. She ran really well here the first day. She was just a bit unlucky, got a bit shuffled back. Tough draw there today. You know, I thought Ben gave her a great ride.
Yeah, you told me what the plan was, sit in the box seat, and it opened up beautifully in the straight, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, you have to ride those good horses like that. You know, around here, it's a tough place. Sometimes you can be lucky, sometimes you can be unlucky, but you gave her a super ride. But she had been showing us all the signs at home that she'd come forward a nice bit from her first run and stepping up to a mile. You know, at the start of the year, we didn't know if she was a miler or could we drop her back to six, but I think 7 or a mile makes no difference.
And what were your thoughts coming away from here last time? She never got a clear run at any stage that day, but really finished off well, didn't she?
I was delighted. You know, she didn't have a hard race. Ben got a feel of her. And, you know, it was only the start of the year, so there's a lot of big targets along the way. So we went home very happy. And as I said, her work has been good since. She's a big girl, you know, she's big. She's big filly, powerful, travels well. And I think there's more to come from this one.
Now, you mentioned big targets there. What sort of races are we looking at for further down the line?
Well, I entered her in the Matron there, so that, you know, that could be, you know, a big one for her. I haven't spoken to Sheikh Fahad yet, so I'll have to see what he thinks. But we entered her the other day, and maybe down the line, that's where she could end up.
Great stuff. And a mile, you feel, is her optimum now?
I think so. I think 7 or a mile. She's not short of speed, so, you know, 7 or a mile is perfect at the moment.
I just wanted to actually bring that up, lads, in terms of the slightly changing sort of face of the flat scene in Ireland, because just an interesting stat. I've made this point a few times that the four sort of elder trainers in Ireland, I suppose, four legendary trainers in their own right. That's John Ox, obviously, who trained Seed the Stars to win the Arc around about 10 years ago. We have Jim Bulger, obviously, who has been, a bit of an Irish icon, really, in terms of where he came from. We've Dermot Weld, who, you know, broke records all over the place. And finally, we have the indefatigable Kevin Prendergast, 88, and still going strong. But just going into this podcast, Dom, they've had 215 runners this season and 10 winners. So collectively, the four of them are operating at around about a 5% strike rate and or less. And obviously, Ox and Prendergast are awaiting their first winner. Now, without trying to say, to paraphrase The Simpsons, that old people are no good at everything, and because these people are quite amazing in terms of what they're doing, there is a new batch of trainers coming up. And bizarrely, I'd nearly include Jessica Harrington in that because she's training flat horses for so few years. But is there a little bit of a changing of the guard? And also, Don, I would note that, you know, Chris Well obviously works with Dermot, but there aren't obvious heir apparents for these four.
Yeah, I think it's a very short sample frame that we have. Yeah. It's a month.
And lots of placed horses. 3 weeks. Well, lots of placed horses as well, to be fair, particularly for Kevin.
And they're getting, like, Joseph O'Brien, I think he went 0 for 30. His first 30 runners, none of them won. And now he's zinging. You know, it just he hit crossbars. And Dermot Wells had a few winners, and he's had a few crossbars as well. But I think it's the nature of the competitiveness of Irish racing, isn't it? Like, and those young trainers, like, you could, like, Ger Lyons, he's flying. I mean, he and Michael Halford were kind of the two kind of young, up-and-coming trainers a good few years ago. Now they're in the top echelon for sure. Ger Lyons is a classic winning trainer now, obviously. Dennis Hogan, Johnny Murtha, he's flying. Even, you know, the likes of Johnny Levins, Paddy Toomey, you know, they're good trainers. They get the horse and they get them right, and you know that whenever they're there, they're trainers to take note of. So, and you know, the other thing is that maybe the stop start didn't suit everybody. Like, Jim Bulger won the first 2-year-old race of the year, and then they were off for a few weeks, and now we're back. So, like, what, you know, we just don't know how ready those trainers had their horses ready to go. Dermot Weld normally bursts out of the traps, and it's just taken a little bit more time this now since the resumption of racing. So maybe there's something in the fact that it was a bit of a stop start to the season, and, you know, it's a bizarre season.
Your dad, Juki, obviously would be one of the more elderly trainers on the go as well. And I suppose, what's it like, I suppose, for these guys who see, you know, the likes of Paddy Toomey, Johnny Murtha, Dunnock O'Brien, Joseph O'Brien, Ger Lyons, to a lesser extent, he's been around for a good while. These sort of younger trainers who have really stolen the march. I mean, Ger Lyons, as of the other day, had a 26% strike rate this season. Johnny Murtha's was over 20, could still be over 20, I think. Paddy Toomey's is 20 odds. And I guess they're kind of evolving the game as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the nature of sports, isn't it? I mean, sports is the most ruthless industry in the world, I would say, in terms of when you're hot, you're hot, and when you're not, you're not. Now, the only thing is, when you were talking about The Simpsons parodying our age of society, and that is a fact. So if Joseph O'Brien, say, had a bad season, people would say, oh, that'd be character building for the young flip. Whereas if Dermot Welch, Jim Bulger have a bad season, oh, gone at the game. That's, unfortunately, that is just the nature of we live in a society. Well, as it turns out, recent months have shown we live in a society that's completely in denial of death. But generally, and particularly in sports and the beauty industry as well, they elevate youth. That's the thing they cherish most in the world. So it's just an unfortunate situation, but it can be overcome, it turns out, because if you're Jessica Harrington, just train winners. If you just train winners, people say, oh, your age is just a number. But if you just train losers, people say, oh, getting on a bit, isn't he? And that unfortunately is the situation we're in.
There's a talking point, obviously, from Tipperary on Wednesday that we definitely need to discuss. And this is another young trainer and a very, very promising trainer in Emmett Mullins, who's been in the news a strangely large amount recently, considering, first of all, he was barred from racecourses for 3 months for his misdemeanor at Leopardstown. Then he had a well-back winner in a really, really bad divided handicap hurdle over 3 miles, Pilbara, owned by Paul Byrne, backed into 8-11, won like he should have been 1-80. That was the 3 o'clock. But prior to that, Juki, we had this situation where the Shunter, who was having his first start for those connections, fell foul of the stewards. And this was a horse, to play the devil's advocate, I suppose, who'd been a bit of a free goer for his previous trainer. And I would imagine, without, I haven't really looked at what they said in the stewards' room, so I don't think it's all that relevant in many ways, but I'd imagine they were trying to train him to settle. But unfortunately, Dukey, the market didn't exactly signify that this horse was going to win, unlike Pilbara. And then the horse is a very, very eye-catching kind of running on, also ran. And basically, there were a lot of repercussions for connections. What were your thoughts?
There's no hard out, but the circumstantial evidence is there's a Trixie going around. And it's going around, like, I heard about it. So if I'm hearing about plots, that's not really a good thing for the plot, is it? So there's a Trixie going around. And we can't say for sure, but perhaps the prize was stolen on connections. And perhaps it's very difficult to know what to say here. Basically, the horse was 2-1. Now, that was a very protectionist price from the bookmakers because they were laying this Trixie. Like, it doesn't, the gamble, in terms of the way it was orchestrated, we've talked before as well about how impressed we are with people who can keep their powder dry to the show. The genie was out of the bottle far too early here. So then you have this situation where the horse was 2-1, granted a protectionist price from the bookmakers who have liabilities on that Trixie. But then he goes off 6-1 on the machine. And in a maiden hurdle, I understand that the Pilbara was ridden in a similar way, but that's a 12-runner handicap hurdle over 3 miles. This is a maiden hurdle where there's a lot of dead wood in front of you. And you look back at the ride, and I mean, it's a bit like me for the last 4 months. There was a distinct lack of vigor in the jockey's performance, and it just looked terrible. But again, it's all circumstantial evidence, and it is important that you play devil's advocate and say that perhaps the horse needs to be settled. There's just so much going on, but it looked desperate.
It didn't look good. I think the bans were justified.
He was keen early on. He did try to settle him. Now, whether you settle him at the back of the field or in the middle of the field, maybe that's just the way the start panned out. And he if his priority was to get him settled, then he had him back. He was very far back, going down the back straight. He did move up a little bit. But then...
At the very worst, John, he should have been third, though.
Yeah, he should have been third. He did ride him out after the final fight. It was obviously couldn't win there, but going to the end of the back straight, he was in a position from which he couldn't win. It's a case of how he got it. If he was trying to move up or wanting to move up, and then the horse made a noise and the jockey said, look, I'll just give him another flight of hurdles to allow him to catch his breath or see if he comes back right, and then rode him. So look, as Brent says, there's a lot of, I wasn't fully aware of all the circumstantial evidence that was behind this, but just watching the race as a race, And taking what the jockey said into account. And if that's the case, then you can understand why he rode him like that. At the same time, he was, the way the race panned out, for whatever reason, if you'd backed him, you never would have been happy that you were close enough to give him a real chance of winning the race.
Exactly. And just on that Yufton thing as well, I should mention that Brian O'Connor, who's supposed the leading Irish journalist in terms of the daily papers beyond the Racing Post at the moment, he did reference this during the week. He's contacted the Turf Club, which is now the IHRB, and one line which I thought was quite interesting from Brian's article in the Irish Times, the deal involves providing additional monitoring of betting trends in Irish racing. That's the BHA's deal, which it signed in February with the IHRB, and I thought this line was quite interesting. It is understood examination of the betting trends in this particular race will take some time to complete and include an international dimension. And just briefly on this, lads, because we're in a really, really seminal time, I think, in terms of the betting industry. We don't have anyone on track. Racecourse bookmakers have become obsolete in many respects now in terms of gambles and all that. There's a lot of betting on the show now. We've obviously, SP's been returned differently than they were. And I would say maybe, lads, we are going to come out of lockdown with the face of how betting on horse racing kind of happens. It's just evolving quite quickly, I would argue, the last few months.
Go ahead, Dan.
I think for a long time, it's been the other way around, doesn't it? Like, it used to be back in the good old days when I was getting into racing, and maybe when you young lads were getting into racing as well, it was the on-course market determined the starting price. But now it's kind of the other way around, isn't it? It's the off-course market, it's the exchanges and the volume of money that's wagered off course as opposed to on course. And you know, it's been a struggle for the on course bookmakers for years, really. And in fairness, they've fought a great game, but with no on course bookmaker, I mean, you're even kind of in talking about races before races, you're even kind of saying the on course market, but it's not the on course market, it's the pre race market, because there is no on course market. But it's always been the pre race market, isn't it? And maybe when we get back to normality, please God, whenever that'll be, with the on-course bookmakers back, it just might be, I don't know, like there have been some bookmakers have been returning their own SPs anyway, haven't they, even before this all happened?
Yeah. Well, this is like, somebody said this to me recently, and I have to, you know, and I suppose give reference to the fact that I can't remember who it was said to me, but he said to me, look up the SP returns in some of these British meetings. And purely for interest, I've just literally come up with the first thing that came up on the Racing Post website here, which is Musselburgh yesterday. And you have a 7-runner race returning 1-1-12, a 5-runner race returning 107, and a 4-runner race returning 105. So bookmakers are returning very, very generous overrounds relative to what it was. And sadly to say, in terms of the on-course lads, basically, Dukie, punters have it better with this system of returning show prices.
Yes, they do. Now, of course, what you have to bear in mind is
They do at the moment.
Yeah, this is the baby photo stage. So the industry SPs are being dressed up for their photos, and they're going to look their absolute best. And they've probably, over time, sort of just let them drift up a little bit back to closer to 2% a runner. But I mean, even still, that would be fair enough, and it will be in line with what it used to be. I don't think it'll be any worse for the punters. I mean, the punters are in a good place at the moment in terms of the SP returns are very fair, and they're getting guaranteed prices, so I don't think you'll have too many complaints from the punters.
Let's hear from Gavin Ryan, who is this week's Joy of Six. Very promising young trainer, Dunnock O'Brien, has taken on Gavin, who was with Jim Bulger as his stable rider. And this is Gavin.
My favourite race course is the Curragh. I've had plenty of luck around there. It's also kind of the biggest stage for us flat lads at home. And it's a very fair track with a big long straight, and it's usually a case the best horse would win. If I could change anything to racing, it would probably be to raise the weights. I think every year the apprentices are getting bigger, and it'll be no harm. So that's the change I'd make. I broke my back in March. I fractured my L2 vertebrae, which was a major blow at the time. There's a lot of pain and pretty much immobile for the early stages. Thankfully, racing was shut down, and I actually ended up missing only, I think, 2 meetings in total. And I was back in full swing, up to full fitness, just when the resumption to racing was announced. So I was all systems go for this, the resumption of racing. So I missed nothing, and I was very lucky. Horse stuck out for Donica ran a nice 2-year-old in a 7-furlong maiden in Leopardstown called Southern Cape. He was second on his debut, so he's a real nice pedigree, and I think he could make into a real nice horse in the future. I'm looking forward to riding Saltonstall tomorrow in Nace in the Premier Handicap for Aidan McGuinness and Dooley Thoroughbreds. He made a great start to his season when he was fourth in the Lincoln, and I think he should come on for that run. And he's also back up to 1.25 miles, which I think is his ideal trip. So I'm really looking forward to riding him. So hopefully, with a bit of luck, he'll go close.
Don, he's one of an interesting crop of apprentices coming through. The likes of Ben Cohn, who obviously rode the big winner at Leopardstown, Sean Martin the other night, and Gavin Andrew Slattery, a big fan of young Dylan McMonagall, and Mikey Sheehy as well. Lots of these kids coming through.
Yeah, no, it's Joey Sheridan as well. No, it's and there are lots of them. I was kind of thinking every time I thought of a name, you just mentioned it there. No, there are lots of them, and they're all Shane Cross, even he's still claiming £3, isn't he? It's mad, like Nathan Cross as well. So Yeah, no, it's a great time for these young jockeys, and they're getting opportunities, aren't they? Like Gavin Ryan now with Dunnock O'Brien and Shane Cross with Joseph O'Brien, and they're riding. You know, it doesn't seem to matter to the trainers or to connections that they fire them into a Group One or into a listed or a group race, and they're not able to claim. But they don't seem to be bothered by that. Let them go, and they're well able to compete with the top professionals. So, no, it's good. And I thought Gavin Ryan was very good in Reverberation last night as well in the Apprentice Handicap, and yeah, no, he's on a high. He's riding really well, and the more winners these lads ride, the more confidence they'll get, and the better they'll get.
I remember doing a piece for Off the Ball and HRI last year with Gavin Andy Slattery and Ben Cohen, and they were doing their leaving cert duty the following week. And one thing that struck with me was that Ben Cohen didn't know which day the leaving cert was starting. This was about roughly 5 days before
he knew
it was
arriving at the 4 o'clock at the Curragh.
Exactly, and I was going to suggest, Ben, at least put your name down on the form. You might get a couple of percentages. As it turns out, he actually got quite a good leaving cert, considering I didn't get the impression that he overdid it on the old study in front. But
well, on that, Johnny, I did a piece with Andrew Slattery for the Racing TV magazine this month, and now he got 390 points in his leaving cert, which is some leaving cert for a lad. He left the Nats exam early because he was going to, I think it was for Ken Cotton, he won it, so he said not so bad. He rode a double, or maybe he had three winners at the Curragh on Irish Guineas weekend, and then the following Wednesday started the leaving cert. Like, unbelievable.
You can just imagine the lad in the exam, like, who's, you know, not the examiner now, but your man who's keeping tabs on everything. Sorry, sir, I just have to go. He's like, you wouldn't mind just telling him what you're riding, like the Dukies.
Yeah, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like,
they're made of different. They're just made of different stock, these lads, Dukie.
Yeah, no, clearly. And but what a gig for Gavin Ryan to get with Dunnock O'Brien. Dunnock has shown a lot of faith in him. And if things work out for Dunnock the way they normally work out for that clan, well, Gavin Ryan is going to be riding his coattails all the way to the top, you would imagine.
Let's get to the concluding part of the show, which is basically previewing all that goes ahead at the weekend in terms of the top races at Epsom on Saturday and some of the Irish action. I'm going to start with you, Don. Let's start with the Oaks. We've this unusual situation, albeit I would imagine if you're into racing and you're not going racing and you like your Saturdays off, Epsom on Saturday is a great bit of crack altogether, because you've got the Oaks at 3:40, the Derby at 4:45, and then you can settle into your evening meal and a few drinks of your champers if all things go well. But the Oaks is very, very notable, Don, because there are only eight runners, the dead eight for punters. Thankfully, we've a hot favourite in Love, but we have a fascinating runner in Frankly Darling, and a seriously fascinating runner for me in Innes Tymon, who was chasing her home all the way to the wire in Royal Ascot. And for all that there are only eight runners, it's an intriguing renewal.
It is, yeah. No, it's great. All of these, like, it's mad that they're coming up. They're all so quickly. The Eclipse on Sunday, the Eclipse is kind of forgotten about because it comes the day after the Derby this year, and the French races as well. So, I'm with you on Enna Simon, Johnny. I thought she did really well to finish second to Frankly Darling in the Ribblesdale. She was kind of in behind and she stayed on well. And look, Frankly Darling, she progressed obviously from winning her maiden at Newcastle and then set forward again to win the Ribblesdale. But it's just going to be interesting to see the rematch between those two. But Love, I know she's the one they have to be. Like, she's the Guineas winner. She was so good in winning the Guineas, and what she did over a mile, she'd probably be better over middle distances. So, and the fact that Peaceful is going to France instead, leaving Love there for Aidan O'Brien and Enna Simon to fly the flag there. Yeah, no, I think she's going to take a lot of beating. And it seems to be easier for fillies to step forward from winning a Guineas to go on to the Oaks, doesn't it? Whatever, like colts, it's rare and they're obviously hugely talented colts when they do it. But I think for fillies, just for whatever reason, anyway, that's in the back of my head, it seems to be easier for them to go from a mile to a mile and a half, especially when they're bred for middle distances.
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing. And like, it's been such a bonkers campaign that you've had all the rules being broken by these top trainers who have essentially had no other choice. And, you know, anyone who's taken on Love and Peaceful in these respective races, particularly Love over the distance, Dukie, you're just saying, well, I have a chance that she's not going to get the mile and a half, when I know for certain Innes Tymon will. And obviously Frankie Darling, it's not a problem for her either, and she's progressing. But personally for me, I don't like taking a short price about horses that have stamina to prove, but obviously on that Guineas form, she should win.
Well, you say that the Guineas form couldn't be working out worse. That's the problem. I mean, it was a devastating performance visually. But Alpine Star beat the second and third by further in Ascot. So that is a worry. Stamina is a worry. And as you say, we're taking a short price. Now, my problem is I think the Ribblesdale was a bit of a boat race as well.
You did say that, Jim.
Yeah, no, of course, it does happen every so often that I'm wrong, Johnny. So we can't rule that possibility. Yeah, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to watch the race because I don't want to back Love at that price, but I don't want to take her on either. So I've wasted your time there for the last 30 seconds. Apologies.
Right. Well, I backed in Assignment at Royal Ascot because I was speculating that she would improve, but this was only 7 days after she scraped home in a maiden at Leopardstown. So if you're going to derive from that what she might do since the 16th of June, she could easily win this race. And to be honest, I think at the each way prices, I can't but see her. She just looks a typical progressive Galileo. I do tend to bracket a lot of these Galileos into the same sort of, I suppose, bracket, if you will, that they do improve. But Aidan's, you know, they just from debut to second run to third run, even to fourth run, that progression is there. Now, Don, to me, this is a more straightforward back in Assignment each way in the Oaks. When you look at the Derby, then you've 16 runners. The draw is obviously a key factor. We've Cameco, who like the Guineas favourite in the Fillies race, is stepping up in distance from a mile. We've English King, who's been the anti-post favourite for a while, but has drawn in one. And unfortunately for you, as you referenced earlier, your fancy for the race, Russian Emperor, is not ridden by Ryan Moore. So where is the betting going to be for this when they go to post at 4:55? Because this, it looks like a race that really could have a slightly volatile market.
Yeah, Russian Emperor is ridden by Shami Heffernan, though, so that's not so bad.
So what does this mean? Can he come home after then, or we're all good again?
I was just seeing it. I know we're earlier to just after the jockeys have been announced. So Padraig Beggy's riding Vatican City. So yeah, they're going over to ride them, and whether they have to quarantine when they come back. Yeah,
but Padraig Beggy riding Vatican City is rather like. I apologise. I forget he's winner of the Derby when he was tracking
Wings of Eagles.
So you can imagine Vatican City, a massive stamina down. So you can imagine he's going to be tracking the likes of Russian Emperor. And are we going to see historic repetition here, Juki?
Well, funny enough, I'm going to have a few quid on Vatican City. Now, I understand...
Yourself and Fran Berry have been on. This horse cannot get a mile and a half, surely.
Well, you see, this could be the great... Now, I was like you. I was kind of laughing at Franberry when he came on and said this before the Guineas. But that young fella is a stockman to his bootstraps. So the problem that Vatican City has is he is a full brother to Glen Eagles and Marvellous. And the other fabled horses from that Galileo Stormcat Nick are Misty For Me, Churchill, Clemmy. There's others. I can't remember them. But what they have in common is they're all Guineas winners. So this horse does have, there are definitely, but he settled so well in the Guineas and he settled so well off no pace. And he ran a huge race for a horse off the back of just two runs. Now, I'm a sucker for falling for these horses that, oh, if he stays, he must have a great chance. But I have faith in the boy Fran. He has seen something. He has looked past the pedigrees. I don't know what he's seen, but I've become a firm believer in this. And Padraig Beggy riding it means we're going to get a bigger price. I'm also backing Cameco because I'm more confident in him staying. Again, you have the worries with Kitten's Joy, but Roaring Lion nearly stayed. Hawkbill was a strong stayer over 12 furlongs. Cameco, again, he's a very straightforward horse. He settles beautifully. And I was so impressed with how he handled the dip in Newmarket because he didn't seem to handle it particularly well in the Royal Lodge the previous season, but he obviously learned from that. I think he'll go close. And just because I'm not having a bet in the Oaks, I'm having three bets here. There's another one, Khalifa Sash, who's a free eagle.
Rated 99.
Yes, it was an ordinary race he won in Goodwood, although the second emissary is very highly regarded. He just looks a really likeable, straightforward horse. You're going to be getting at least one extra place with the bookmakers here. I wouldn't be surprised if someone goes five places. He's 33-1. You could take a chance at that price each way.
That's fair enough. And another one, Don, that I'm half interested in is Mohican Heights, who's by Australia out of a Shirley Heights mare. And I think Australia, I get the feeling his horses are going to be badly in need of basically not being two-year-olds and just progressing into three-year-olds. Mohican Heights, unlike some of the shorter price horses in the race, is drawn very, very high, which should be fine for him. He was slightly ahead of Mogul, obviously, when they clashed. Arthur's Kingdom was second, O'Brien second string on the day in the King Edward Stakes. But he's just a horse that might progress. He's very lightly raced, and to me, it's one of those derbies that could throw up a bit of a springer.
I think you and I were watching the same videos after Royal Ascot, Johnny.
Yeah, there you go.
I put him down as a St. Ledger horse after that. I thought he did very, very well to get as close as he did. He was out the back. They didn't go fast. Pile Driver showed that turn of foot, and he just stayed on. That was a mile and a half, obviously, the King Edward. So it's the same trip, but they'll go faster. So maybe that will bring his stamina into play. So, yeah, and definitely his high draw is a plus. Well, you kind of prefer being in the middle, but if you're given a choice between high and low, you definitely go high. So, yeah, I'm kind of disappointed he's running in the Derby because I was hoping that he might go kind of Gordon Stakes, Great Voltage, or St. Ledger, that type of route. But anyway, he's definitely an interesting horse. But, Russian Emperor, I just think Russian Emperor has got stacks in his favour, and he's progressive, and he'll probably improve for stepping up and trip. And just the one little niggle is the fact that, you know, I'm sure Ryan Moore would have had the choice, the fact that he's chosen to ride Mogul. So,
yeah,
obviously he's impressing at home.
The tactics would be interesting because I thought, you know, Ballydoyle has changed its tactical kind of outlook on races in recent years. It's kind of got basically stopped running no-hopers as pacemakers because it doesn't serve any purpose. You then have the likes of Sovereign, who isn't a complete no-hoper and wins, and you ensure a genuine pace. I thought in the Irish Guineas, they got it badly wrong, really, in that they played into the hands of the favourite. But, like, tactically, Dukey, what are they going to do here with all these runners? Who are they trying to beat? Who are they trying to set the race up for? Or are they all running on their merits, dare we say it?
Well, I don't know. I haven't got a clue what they're going to do because, as you say, the Irish Guineas this year, the Irish Oaks last year, I think that half the time they get themselves in a muddle with their tactics. There's a big field here. There's plenty of pace on. Khalifa Sat was one that I mentioned. I don't think they have to ensure a strong pace here. And obviously, Cameco, you see, If you just go an even pace in the Derby, I mean, it's probably the stiffest mile and a half there is out there. I don't know. Maybe there is a stiffer mile and a half, but the Derby is just a savage test. And they can just send their horses out. They don't have to do anything clever here because I think half the time when they try to do something clever, they end up confusing themselves.
The French Oaks we're going to have to mention as well in terms of the overseas races for us Irish. Very, very strong hand for the Irish here. You kind of, obviously, we heard from Jessica Hynington there in terms of, you know, the season that she's had. And it did look a very obvious one for Peaceful, presuming that they went this way with Love. Alpine Star is favourite for the race in the Antipost book at the moment, Juki. And we certainly have a very interesting race. Peaceful, to me, could be the bet at the prices. But what do you make of it?
Yeah, I'm very much in agreement. I can see why Alpine Star is favourite because on collateral form, that is a seriously strong piece of form. As I mentioned before, she beat the Guineas placed horses by further than Love. But Peaceful, I have a real soft spot for Peaceful as well. And also what I like about her is going to France, where you can get these funny races tactically. She's so straightforward. They can jump her out in front if there's no gallop on here. She's almost certain to improve for the step up and trip, isn't she? Now, I would say the same about Alpine Star, granted, but when I looked at the prices, I was surprised to see 3-1 and 5-1. So certainly a 5-1 Peaceful would be the bet for me.
Don?
Yeah, well, what they have in common is that they both race over a mile the last day, won Group 1 races, and both looked like they'd be better over further, didn't they? Like, they both finished off their races really well. Alpine Star, she was seriously impressive. Peaceful was impressive as well. She kind of came under pressure early and just kept on responding. Like, she wasn't traveling best going to the 2 furlong marker, but yet she was strongest by far at the finish. She was going away again. I think Fancy Blue is going to go as well, isn't she? Like, she was a little bit unlucky in the Irish Guineas. She'd probably improve for stepping up the trip as well. So, yeah, no, it's a fascinating. I hadn't realized they were that far apart in the betting. Was it 3-1? Peaceful 5-1 Alpine Star.
Yeah, and in fairness to Fancy Blue as well, like, absolutely certain to step up and trip positively and so forth. Really strong Irish contingent. And before we wrap up, lads, I would like to talk about the Irish racing at the weekend. I've done a few of the racing post spotlights for the Nace card, which was a lovely way to start the Thursday morning, because this is cracking racing. We have Art Power making the trip over for the Lacan Stakes at 5:45, Coolmore Sioux Nation Lacan Stakes. We have a really, really good renewal of the Oaks trial as well, in which Even So and Laburnum are going to go head-to-head for the Coolmore team. Even So, obviously, trained by the informed Ger Lines. We have some very, very fascinating races. I'm going to cut to the chaser, Dukey. My nap of the weekend is actually running in that Oaks trial. It's Laburnum. I absolutely love the way she did it on her debut, despite the fact that she looked like she had a ton to learn in terms of racing. She obviously runs against Even So, has the classic form. But this is a really, really high-class card. Unfortunately, as a professional race goer, you're still slightly not able to go. You can go to Nace and you can watch the racing from just outside the track, but you're just going to have to make do with watching on the box, I think.
Hi there, Johnny and Brendan. John McDonald from Barwon Racing. Without doubt, an exciting weekend ahead with the Derby and Oaks on Saturday and the Eclipse to follow on Sunday. 8 declared for the Oaks on Thursday morning. We've gone 11-10 love, the English Guineas winner, with the Ribblesdale winner, Frankly Darling, at 2-1 with 13-2 and it's Diamond and it's bigger prices the others. And 16 in Saturday's Derby, English King is 11-4. Cameco, the Guineas winner, 4s. Mogul, 5s. He'll be ridden by Ryan Moore. Russian Emperor, Shemi Heffernan's out is 13-2. It's bigger prices the others, and I've been asked for a weekend selection. I'm going to put up Sussex Garden in the second race at Nace on Saturday. She was a course and distance winner on debut. She should be better for the experience, and I think she'll be tough to beat.
I am. These are dark times. Jessica Harrington talking about our barcodes and what have you. Yeah. Our culture is being rent asunder, Johnny. The nod and a wink is dead. But anyway, let's talk about more positive things. Yeah. Let's talk about Nace on Saturday. Oh, that Oaks trial. I love that Silence Please. But I am a little bit worried about the opposition. She has to consider weight.
Well.
She's penalised yet. Not a huge amount of rain about, but it probably still will be Ealing. I'm more worried about the pace. I couldn't find any pace in the race. If I could talk to Jessica Harrington, I'd say send Silence Please on, because she looks so straightforward in Navan. That form has had a boost since with the second winning. But I'm not sure. I might just watch that race and watch her learn with interest as well. You mentioned Art Power. So
This just wins, doesn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, you have Royal Lid, the Mill Isle and Summer Sands, who were all very decent two-year-olds, but all have something to prove. And I mean, that Art Power, I know it was only a handicap, but it was a Royal Ascot handicap. And he was a bit keen early, and he's just bolted up.
So, and his stable was only in very middling form going into the Royal meeting as well.
Right, I didn't know that. But I mean, you could see him making up into a July Cup horse. And I mean, he won't be missed in the market, but he should be winning. What else have I got for you? The 5:15 in Cork. I'm not sure about this. Search for a Song is in, and Manuela de Vega is in, but Manuela de Vega will probably go for the Lancashire Oaks. And Search for a Song was so disappointing in the current. I mean, I'd give her another chance because she is a filly with loads of ability, but that was a dismal effort. Although fillies be crazy, you know, so let's just put a line through that.
When was the last time you've interacted with a woman that wasn't your mother? Just for argument's sake, because I know you've been living a sheltered existence for some time now.
Interacted with a woman. Well, I've been texting away with a few women I knew in a former. Doesn't count. Okay, I haven't interacted with a woman in a long time. But
you,
I mean, I haven't interacted with her. Ah, oh, stop! I mean, just I smiled my way through that haircut. It was just in the land of the hairy, the shorn man is king, Johnny. I walked out of that place 10 feet tall. But anyway, back to Cork. Vermilly. So what about this Vermilly? The Premier Handicap of 5:45. He was very well back for a similar Premier Handicap in the Curra on Guineas weekend. Didn't happen for him, but he didn't have a lot of luck in running. So I'd give him another chance. They obviously think he's well handicapped off 100, which he could be. Could end up being a Melbourne Cup horse. And the 5:30 in Fairy House, bit of a clash of the generations between Speaking Colours and Monarch of Egypt. Speaking Colours, I don't know whether he'll back up just a week later, but I think he'd have a good chance, because Monarch of Egypt, that was a curious effort in the Jersey Stakes. He didn't look to be putting it all in early, and then he nearly won the race. So the ability still remains, but I think he might be a horse that could go a bit sour. So Speaking Colours, I think they'll divide a penalty there. And I do have an app for you.
Okay, we can hold for that. Actually, we can hold for that. I want to just mention one other horse, Fame and Acclaim, who's trained by Joseph, running in the mile handicap at Nice. This is another race I did. Now, Toronto for Aiden is interesting here. He ran over a mile and two, more or less sacrifices a pacemaker behind Crossfire Hurricane. And considering the way he was ridden, he actually did very well to finish only 3.5 lengths back. He might be able to stamp his class in this, but I think it's worth looking at Fame and Acclaim's run at Gorn on his return. This horse is actually a maiden, but on his return at Gorn, he was drawn low. He broke pretty much first. He somehow ended up being a bad last, and then he rattled home, and I just imagine that he'd come on a lot for that run, and I think he'll run a big race from gate two, certainly at an each way price. Let's get to Don's opinion of the weekend action in Ireland, then we'll get to the Naps. What do you make of Don?
Yeah, I'd be giving horses another chance.
Oh, here we go.
Probably the theme. Definitely with Brennan's Search for Song, like what she did in the Irish Ledger last year was just incredible, to race as freely as she did early on and to make a grand as quickly as she did, and then to last all the way home, beating top class there as the first 3-year-old filly to win the race in Eons. So yeah, like she was disappointing the last day. It was over 10 furlongs, was the first run of the year, back up to a mile and a half. That trip should suit her better, and she'd probably get further than a mile and six if they want to. But if she does go and run in that, then yeah, she's going to take an awful lot of beating. And Mill Isle. I wouldn't give up in Mill Isle yet. I know.
I was a bit disappointed with her Royal Ascot, Don.
Watch this. Maybe yeah. Different. This video, Johnny. She was out in the wing. She was low. She was on the far side the whole way. The race developed on the near side. Golden Horde led the whole way up the near side rail.
Just she did show a good attitude and all that.
And no, she did. And she ran on again once she. Now look, maybe I'm in the business of making excuses for Mill Isle, but that 6 furlongs is probably going to be her trip all right. So, and but look, she is penalized as well. She doesn't get the fillies allowance. She's to carry a £3 penalty, which negates her fillies allowance. And Art Power is monstrous. Like, you know, we just don't know how good he can be. I suppose, you know, he is stepping up to 6 furlongs. He looked so good over 5 the last day. Well, he did win over 6 at Newcastle the time before. It wasn't in the same grade, so he does have to go an extra furlong, but I don't think that's going to be too much of an issue. I just think Mill Isle might be a little bit overlooked and people will have given up on her, and she might be a bit of a price.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't give up on her. I thought, you know, I'd more or less forgive her the Guineas run. Maybe you're making a good point. And that run, in fairness, in her final 2-year-old race for a horse that never travelled, I absolutely loved the way she finished the race. Stable in sensational form. Dukie, let's get a nap from you.
Yes, the 440 in Nice on Saturday. This Ocean Monarch, Jessica Harrington, her horse has gone well. Encouraging comeback in a hot race in the current. That race is already starting to work out. Now, it'd probably be folly to use music to my ears and Siamese yards because they obviously didn't run their race that day. But even Hieroglyphic, who was out the back of the telly that day behind Jean Perzalizia, that went and ran well at the weekend. So the Ocean Monarch gets a step up to a mile, which promises to suit. And I think it'll be winning.
That's running against Fame and Acclaim, but in fairness, I can completely see where you're coming from there. My nap, as I said, is Laburnum in that Oaks trial. Now, what I should just mention the betting on this, because it should be somewhat interesting, in that Geraldine's kind of has a good idea of what is required in terms of maybe beating that horse to an extent, because Laburnum first time out beat Thunder Kiss on debut. Now, Thunder Kiss obviously showed the form to be reasonable since, but the thing about these Galileos is that they could just improve 20 pounds in the space of a week, in the space of a race, literally. I just love the way, basically, she was kind of readily on top of the line, a bit like Napa Valley last week after being niggled along for much of the race. As much as she's running against a horse, even so, who ran really well, beat everything bar the O'Brien horses in the Guineas, I think she'll step up, and I think she's a great chance. Could see her going off favourite. So even Laburnum is my nap in the 5:15. Very much looking forward to seeing her. We'll end up with you, Don.
Yeah, Russian Emperor in Zari. I just think he's got a lot in his favour. Progressive, Shamey Heffernan is no negative for all that maybe Ryan Moore did have the choice, but I just think that his draw was a lot, and especially he's drawn in 6, and the two market leaders, English King and Mogul, are drawn in 1 and 2. I think that's a significant positive in favour of, well, definitely against the top 2 in the market and in favour of Russian Emperor.
So here's one, Pia. I know it's putting you on the spot, and Dukie has abandoned our freestyle ways in this by giving us a running order this week and going forward. But if Aidan O'Brien said to you, if Aidan O'Brien said to you this morning, he rang you up and he said, listen, Don, and he may well say, listen, if he said, listen, Don, I know you fancy this horse. To be honest, whatever I put in him has no bearing on how much I fancy him or not. But I know you fancy him, Don, because you're such a good lad. I'll give you the option of Ryan Moore or Seamus Heffernan. Who would you pick?
Oh, that's a good question. look,
one-man stock is very high at the moment. One man we obviously haven't seen in Ireland.
Well, Seamus Heffernan is flying. Ryan Moore has probably more experience of Epsom and Derbies. So I'd say, Aidan, thanks very much for the call. I'll take either.
Oh, for God's sake. Don, Dookie.
Sorry, what was the question again?
Jesus. That was episode, I think that was, I think we have to end on that. Dookie obviously lost his train of thought, thinking of the double card we have in Sligo and Bellystown today.
I was thinking of, that Don, I mentioned that it was such a good question. I mean, I can't actually remember it, but I like the way you were riffing off the running order there. You see, you want to be all riff, but you need some structure in your life, son. And then you can just throw in these odd questions and what have you. And it's a beautiful thing. I'm sorry I can't remember what that question was.
Thanks for listening.